Safari typed sharpening with a whetstone, looked at a couple of videos, then went to work. It didn't take long to put a pretty keen edge on the scythe. I took a picture to show Mr. Bowditch, then biked to the hospital. Found him sleeping. Biked back in the late afternoon light and fed radar. Missed baseball, a little. Well, maybe more than a little. 7. On Tuesday afternoon, I started scything the tall grass, first in the front yard and then in the back. After an hour or so, I looked at my red hands and knew that blisters would soon form there if I wasn't careful. I put radar on her leash, walked her down to our house, and found a pair of Dad's work gloves in the garage. We walked back up the hill, going slowly in deference to radar's sore hips. I whacked away at the grass on the side while radar snoozed, then fed her and knocked off for the day. Dad cooked hamburgers on the backyard grill, and I ate 3, plus cherry cobbler for dessert. Dad drove me to the hospital and waited downstairs reading reports while I went up to visit Mr. Bowditch. I saw he'd also had a hamburger, plus mac and cheese on the side, but he hadn't eaten much of either. Of course, he hadn't spent 2 hours swinging a scythe, and although he tried to be pleasant and looked at some new pictures of radar, plus one of the scythe and another of his half-cut front lawn, it was clear to me he was in a lot of pain. He kept pushing the button that released the dope. The third time he did it, it made a low buzzing sound, like when a contestant on a game show gives the wrong answer.
Fucking thing. I'm maxed out for an hour. Let her go, Charlie, before I start barking at you just because I feel miserable. Come back Friday. No, Saturday. Maybe I'll feel better by then.
Any word on when they're gonna let you out?
Sunday, maybe. A lady came and said she wanted to help me work on a...
He raised his big hands, bruised on the backs from IV needles, and made quotation marks.
Recovery plan. I told her to fuck off. Not in those exact words. I'm trying to be a good patient, but it's hard. It's not just the pain, it's...
He made a weak circling gesture, then dropped his arms back to the coverlet. Too many people, I said. You're not used to it.
You understand. Thank God somebody does. And too much noise. Before she left, the woman, her name's something like Ravenhugger, asked me if I had a bed on the first floor of my house. I don't, but the couch pulls out. Although it hasn't been made up as a bed in a long time. I guess, maybe not ever. I only bought it because it was on sale.
I'll make it up if you tell me where the sheets are.
Do you know how to do that?
As the son of a widower who had been a very active alcoholic, I did. Also how to wash clothes and buy groceries. I'd been a good little codependent. Yes.
Linen closet, second floor. Have you been up there yet?
I shook my head.
Well, I guess now's your chance. It's across from my bedroom. Thank you.
No problem. And the next time that lady comes in, tell her I'm your recovery plan. I got up. Better go, let you get some rest. I went to the door. He spoke my name, and I turned back.
You're the best thing that's happened to me in a long time.
Then, as if speaking as much to himself as to me,
I'm going to trust you. I can't see any choice.
I told Dad what he'd said about me being the best thing that had happened to him, but not about the trusting part. Some instinct made me hold that back. Dad gave me a strong one-armed hug and kissed my cheek and said he was proud of me. That was a good day. 8. On Thursday, I forced myself to knock on the shed door again. I really did not like that little building. No one knocked back or scratched. I tried to tell myself I'd imagined that weird skittering sound, but if I had, Radar had imagined it too, and I didn't think dogs were much in the imagination department. Of course, she could have been reacting to my reaction. Or, if I'm going to tell the truth, she could have sensed my fear and my almost instinctive revulsion. On Friday, I trundled our lawn boy up the street and went to work on the half-tamed yard. I figured I could have it looking relatively spiff by the weekend. The following week was spring vacation, and I planned to spend a lot of it at Number 1 Sycamore. I'd clean the windows, then go to work on the picket fence, get it standing up straight again. I thought seeing those things would cheer Mr. Bowditch up. I was mowing along the Pine Street side of the house. Radar was inside, wanting nothing to do with the roaring lawn boy, when my phone vibrated in my pocket. I killed the mower and saw Arcadia Hospital on the screen. I took the call with a sinking in my gut, sure someone was going to tell me Mr. Bowditch had taken a turn for the worse, or, worse still, passed away. It was about him, all right, but it wasn't anything bad. A lady named Mrs. Ravensburger asked if I could come in tomorrow morning at 9 to talk about Mr. Bowditch's recovery and aftercare. I said I could, and she then asked if I could bring along a parent or guardian. I said, probably.
I saw your picture in the paper with that wonderful dog of his. Mr. Bowditch owes you both a debt of gratitude.
I assumed she was talking about the son, and I guess she could have been, but Radar and I turned up elsewhere, too. Or maybe I should say everywhere. Dad came in late, as he usually did on Fridays, and he had a copy of the Chicago Tribune, open to page 2, where the Trib ran a little sidebar called In Other News. It collated bite-sized items of a more cheerful nature than the stuff on the front page. The one featuring Radar and me was headlined Hero Dog, Hero Teen. I wasn't exactly shocked to see myself in the Trib, but I was surprised. This is a pretty good world, all evidence to the contrary notwithstanding, and there are thousands of people doing thousands of good deeds every day, maybe millions. A kid helping out an old guy who fell off a ladder and broke his leg was nothing special, but the picture sold it. Radar was caught in mid-lick, me with my arm around her neck and my head thrown back in laughter. And looking, dare I say, rather handsome. Which made me wonder if Gina Pascarelli, my daydream girl, had come across it.
See that? Dad asked, tapping the caption. AP, Associated Press. That picture's probably in 500 or 600 newspapers today, coast to coast. Not to mention all over the internet. Andy Warhol said, eventually everyone in America would be famous for 15 minutes. And I guess you're having your quarter hour. Want to go out to Bingo's to celebrate?
I certainly did, and while I was eating my beef ribs, the double rack, I asked Dad if he'd come with me to the hospital tomorrow to talk to a lady named Mrs. Ravensburger. He said it would be his pleasure. 9. We met in Ravensburger's office. With her was a young woman named Melissa Wilcox, tall and toned, her blonde hair worn in a stubby, no-nonsense ponytail. She was going to be Mr. Bowditch's physical therapist. She did most of the talking, checking a little notebook from time to time so as not to forget anything. She said that after some discussion, Mr. Bowditch had agreed to allow her into his home twice a week to work on his range of motion and get him on his feet again. First with Canadian crutches, the kind with metal circlets for arm support, then with a walker. She would also take his vitals to make sure he was progressing nicely and check on something called pin care.
Which you will have to do, Charlie.
I asked her what that meant, and she explained that the rods going into his leg had to be swabbed regularly with disinfectant. She said it was a painful procedure, but not as painful as an infection that could lead to gangrene.
I wanted to come 4 days a week, but he wouldn't have it,
Melissa said.
He's very clear on what he will and won't have.
Tell me about it, I thought.
He'll need a lot of help at first, Charlie.
And he says you'll give it. According to him, Mrs. Ravensburger put in, you're his recovery plan. She was talking to me, but looking at my dad, as if inviting him to object. He didn't. Melissa flipped to a new page in her little notebook, which was bright purple with a snarling tiger on the front.
He says there's a bathroom on the first floor?
Yes. I didn't bother telling her it was really small. She'd find that out on her first home visit. She nodded.
That's a big deal because he won't be capable of climbing stairs for some time.
But he will be able to eventually.
If he works hard, sure. He's elderly, claims he doesn't know exactly how old he is, as a matter of fact. But he's in good shape. He doesn't smoke, says he doesn't drink, isn't carrying any extra weight.
That's a biggie, Dad said.
You bet it is. Weight-bearing is a huge concern, especially in the elderly. The plan is for him to leave the hospital on Monday. There have to be safety bars installed on the sides of the toilet before then. Can you do that this weekend? If not, we'll push his release back to Tuesday.
I can do it. I saw more YouTube videos in my immediate future.
He'll need a urinal for nights and a bedpan for emergencies. You okay with that?
I said yes, and I was. I had cleaned up vomit on more than one occasion. Dumping poo from a bedpan into the toilet might actually be a step up. Melissa closed her notebook.
There are 1,000 other things, little things, most of them. This will help. Check it out.
She took a pamphlet from the back pocket of her jeans. The title wasn't Home Care for Dummies, but it could have been. I said I'd read it and put it in my back pocket.
I'll know better what's needed when I see the place for myself, Melissa said. I thought of taking a run up there this afternoon, but he's very insistent that I not go inside until he's back.
Yes, Mr. Bowditch could be very insistent. I had discovered that early.
Are you sure you want to take this on, Charlie?
Mrs. Ravensburger asked. This time she didn't face-check my father first.
Yes. Even if it means staying with him the first 3 or 4 nights? Melissa asked. I tried to discuss the possibility of a rehab unit. There's a nice one called Riverview that has vacancies, but he wouldn't hear of it. Said he just wanted to go home.
I can stay with him. Although the thought of maybe sleeping upstairs in a bedroom I'd so far not even seen was weird.
No problem. It's school vacation.
Mrs. Ravensburger turned to my dad.
Are you all right with this arrangement, Mr. Reed?
I waited, not sure what he'd say, but he came through.
A little worried about it, which is probably natural, but Charlie's responsible. Mr. Bowditch seems to have formed a bond with him, and he really has no one else.
I said, Miss Wilcox, about the house? She smiled.
Melissa, please. We are going to be colleagues, after all.
It was easier to call her Melissa than it was to call Mr. Bowditch Howard, because she was closer to my age. About the house, don't take it personally, like he's afraid you're going to steal stuff or something. He's just, well, I didn't quite know how to finish, but Dad did.
He's a private person.
That's right, I said. And you have to make allowances for him being a little grouchy, too, because Melissa didn't wait for the because.
Believe me, if I had an external fixator holding my broken leg together, I'd be grouchy, too.
What's his insurance situation? Dad asked Mrs. Ravensburger.
Can you say? Mrs. Ravensburger and Melissa Wilcox exchanged a glance. Mrs. Ravensburger said,
I'm not comfortable going into detail about a patient's financial arrangements, but I will say that, according to the bursar, he intends to take care of his expenses personally.
Ah, Dad said, as if that explained everything. His face said it explained nothing.
He got up and shook hands with Mrs. Ravensburger. So did I. Melissa followed us out into the hall, seeming to glide in her blinding white sneakers.
LSU?
I asked. She looked surprised.
How'd you know?
The notebook. Basketball? She smiled.
And volleyball.
Given her height, I bet she had a hell of a smash. Chapter 5. Shopping. My father's pipe. A call for Mr. Bowditch. The flower canister. 1. We went to the hardware store to get a safety bar installation kit, then to Pet Pantry, where there was also a walk-in veterinary. I got heartworm chewables and carprofen for Radar's arthritis. That stuff is supposed to be by prescription only, but when I explained the situation, the lady gave it to me, only specifying that the meds had to be a cash deal. She said Mr. Bowditch bought all of Radar's stuff there, paying extra for delivery. Dad used his credit card for the safety bar kit. I used my own money for the pills. Our last stop was the drugstore, where I bought a urinal with a long neck, a bedpan, the disinfectant I was supposed to use for the pin care, and 2 spray bottles of heavy-duty window cleaner. I paid for that stuff too, but not cash. I had a $250 limit on my Visa, but wasn't worried the card would be refused. I was never what you'd call a shop-till-you-drop type. On the ride home, I kept expecting Dad to talk to me about this commitment I'd made, which was, after all, pretty big for a kid of 17. He didn't, though. Just listened to classic rock on the radio and sometimes sang along. I found out soon enough that he was just deciding what he wanted to say. I walked up to Mr. Bowditch's house, where I was greeted by Radar. I put her meds on the counter, then peeked in the bathroom. I thought the tight quarters would actually be helpful when it came to installing the safety bars, and for him using them, but that was tomorrow's job. I'd seen a pile of clean rags on the shelf over the washing machine in the cellar. I went down and grabbed a double handful. It was a pretty spring day, and my initial idea had been to spend it outdoors putting the fence to rights, but I decided that the windows should come first, so the stink of the cleanser would be out of the house when Mr. Bowditch came back. It also gave me an excuse to tour the place. In addition to the kitchen, pantry, and living room, the places where he actually lived, there was a dining room with a long table covered with a dust cloth. There were no chairs, which made it look pretty empty. There was also a room meant to be a study or a library or a combination of the two. I saw with real dismay that the ceiling had leaked and some of the books had gotten wet. These were nice ones, too, expensive-looking and leather-bound, not like the careless stacks in the back hall. There was a set of Dickens, a set of Kipling, a set of Mark Twain, and a set of someone named Thackeray. I decided that when I had more time, I'd pull them from the shelves, spread them on the floor, and see if they could be saved. There were probably YouTube videos about how to do that. I pretty much lived by the tube that spring. There were 3 bedrooms on the second floor, plus the linen closet and another, bigger bathroom. His bedroom was lined with more bookshelves, and there was a reading lamp on the side of the bed where he obviously slept. The books in here were mostly paperbacks, mysteries, science fiction, fantasy, and pulp horror going back to the 40s. Some looked really good, and I thought if things went okay, I'd ask to borrow some. I guessed Thackeray would be heavy going, but The Bride Wore Black looked right up my street. The bodacious bride on the cover was wearing black all right, but not much of it. There were 2 books on his bed table, a paperback called Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury, and a thick, hardcover tome titled The Origins of Fantasy and Its Place in the World Matrix, Jungian Perspectives. On the cover was a funnel filling up with stars. One of the other bedrooms held a double bed that had been made up but was covered with a plastic sheet. The third was completely empty and smelled stale. If I'd been wearing hard shoes instead of sneaks, my footfalls would have made spooky, hollow sounds in that one. Narrow stairs, psycho stairs, I thought, led up to the third floor. It wasn't an attic but was being used as one. There was plenty of furniture jumbled up in the 3 rooms, including 6 fancy chairs that were probably supposed to go with the dining room table, and the bed from the empty room with its head laid lengthwise across it. There were a couple of bikes, one missing a wheel, dusty cartons of old magazines, and in the 3rd and smallest room, a wooden box of what looked like carpentry tools from the time when talking pictures were new. On the side, faded, were the initials A.B. I picked out the drill, thinking it would help with the safety bar installation, but it was frozen solid, and no wonder. The roof had leaked in the corner where the tools had been left, and the whole works, drill, 2 hammers, saw, a leveling gadget with a bleary yellow bubble in the middle, had gone to Rust City. Something needed to be done about the leaky roof, I thought, and before the next winter arrived, or there would be structural damage, if there hadn't been already. I started with the windows on the 3rd floor because they were the dirtiest, filthy, in fact. I could see I'd be changing the water in my bucket often, and, of course, the insides were only half the job. I knocked off for lunch, heating a can of chili on the elderly hot point.
"Should I let you lick the bowl?"
I asked Radar. She looked up at me with those big brown eyes of hers.
"I won't tell if you won't."
I put it down and she went at it. Then I went back to the windows. By the time I finished, it was mid-afternoon. My fingers looked pruney and my arms were tired from all the rubbing. But Windex and vinegar, a YouTube tip, really did make a difference. The house was filled with light.
"I like it," I said. "Want to take a stroll down to my house? See what Dad's up to?"
She barked that she did. 2. Dad was waiting for me on the front porch. His pipe was on the rail, along with a pouch of tobacco, which meant we would be having the talk after all, a serious one. There was a time when my dad smoked cigarettes. I don't remember how old I was when Mom gave him the pipe for his birthday. It wasn't a fancy Sherlock Holmes job, but I think expensive. I do remember she'd been asking him to quit the cancer sticks, and he kept promising, vaguely the way addicts do, that he would get around to it. The pipe did the trick. First, he cut down on the butts, then let them go entirely, not long before Mom crossed the goddamn bridge to get us a box of chicken. I liked the smell of the 3 sales he got at the tobacconist downtown, but quite often there was nothing to smell because it kept going out. That might have been part of Mom's master plan, but I never got a chance to ask her. Eventually, the pipe went into the pipe rack on the mantle, at least until Mom died. Then it came out again. I never saw him with another cigarette during his drinking years, but the pipe was always with him at night while he watched those old movies, although he rarely lit it or even filled the bowl. He chewed hell out of the stem and the bit, though, and had to replace both. He took the pipe with him to AA meetings when he started going. There was no smoking there, so he chewed on the stem. Sometimes, Lindy Franklin told me this, with the bowl upside down. Around the time of his 2nd anniversary, the pipe went back into the rack on the mantel. I asked him about it once, and he said, "I'm 2 years sober. I think it's time I stopped teething." But the pipe still came out once in a while. Before some of the big agent meetings at the Chicago office, if he had to make a presentation. Always on the anniversary of Mom's death. And it was out now, complete with tobacco, which meant this was going to be a very serious talk. Radar climbed to the porch, old lady style, pausing to inspect each step. When she finally made it, Dad scratched behind her ears. "Who's a good girl?" Radar made a woofing noise and lay down beside Dad's rocker. I took the other one.
"Did you get her started on the meds?"
"Not yet. I'll sneak the heartworm and the arthritis pill into her supper."
"You didn't take the safety bar installation kit."
"That's for tomorrow. I'll read the instructions tonight. Also the home care for dummies pamphlet. I'll need to borrow your drill if it's okay. I found someone's toolbox, initials AB on it, maybe his father's or grandfather's, but everything in it's rusty. The roof leaks."
"You're welcome to use it."
He reached for the pipe. The bowl was already loaded. He had some kitchen matches in his breast pocket and he scratched one alight with his thumbnail, a skill that had fascinated me as a little kid. Still did, actually.
"You know, I'd be happy to go up there with you and help out."
"No, it's okay. It's a pretty small bathroom and we'd just get in each other's way."
"But that's not really it, is it, Chip?"
How long had it been since he'd called me that? 5 years? He held the lit match, already halfway down the stick, over the bowl, and began sucking away. Also waiting for me to reply, of course, but I had nothing. Radar raised her head, smelled the fragrant tobacco smoke, then put her snout back on the porch boards. She looked pretty contented. He shook out the match.
"There's nothing up there you don't want me to see, is there?"
That made me think of Andy, asking if there were a lot of stuffed animals and a spooky Kit Kat clock that followed you with its eyes. I smiled. "No, it's just the house, kind of run down with a leaky roof. Something will have to be done about that eventually." He nodded and puffed his pipe.
I talked to Lindy about this situation.
I wasn't surprised. Lindy was his sponsor, and Dad was supposed to talk about the things that bothered him.
He says that maybe you have a caretaker mentality.
From when I was boozing.
God knows there were times when you did caretake me, young as you were. Cleaned the house, did the dishes, got your own breakfast, and sometimes your dinner.
He paused.
Those days are hard for me to remember, and even harder to talk about.
It's not that.
Then what is it?
I still didn't want to tell him I'd made a deal with God and had to keep up my end of the bargain, but there was something else I could tell him, something he'd understand, and fortunately it was true. You know how they talk in AA about maintaining an attitude of gratitude? He nodded.
A grateful alcoholic doesn't get drunk, that's what they say.
And I'm grateful you don't drink anymore. Maybe I don't tell you that all the time, but I am. So why don't we say I'm trying to pay it forward and leave it at that? He took his pipe from his mouth and swiped a hand across his eyes.
All right. We will. But I want to meet him eventually. I feel like it's my duty. Do you understand that?
I said I did. Maybe when he's a little bit down the road from the accident? He nodded.
That works. I love you, kiddo.
Love you too.
As long as you understand you're biting off a lot, you know that, right?
I did, and I was aware I didn't know just how much. I thought that was good. If I really knew, I might lose heart. There's that other thing they say in your program about taking it a day at a time. He nodded.
Okay, but spring vacation will be over fast. You have to keep up with your studies no matter how much time you feel you have to spend up there. I insist on that.
Okay. He looked at the pipe.
This thing's gone out. It always does.
He put it on the porch rail, then leaned down and scratched the thick fur on the nape of Radar's neck. She raised her head, then lowered it again.
This is a damn good dog.
She is.
Fell in love with her, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
She's got a collar, but no tag. Which means Mr. Bowditch hasn't paid the dog tax. My guess is she's never been to the vet.
Mine too.
Never been vaccinated for rabies, among other things.
He paused, then said,
Got a question, and I want you to think about it very seriously. Are we going to end up on the hook for this? The groceries, the dog meds, the safety bars.
Don't forget the urinal, I said.
Are we? Tell me what you think.
He told me to keep track and he'd take care of the expenses. This was half an answer at best. I knew it and Dad probably did too. On second thought, strike the probably.
Not that we're exactly in a hole on his account. A couple $100 is all, but the hospital... Do you know how much a week stay in Arcadia costs? Plus the operations, of course, and all the aftercare?
I didn't, but as an insurance adjuster, Dad did.
$80,000. Minimum.
There's no way we could be on the hook for that, could we?
No, that's all him. I don't know what kind of insurance he has or if he has any. I checked with Lindy, and he has nothing with Overland. Medicare, probably. Beyond that, who knows?
He shifted in his seat.
I checked him out a little bit. I hope that doesn't make you mad.
It didn't, and didn't surprise me, because checking people out was what my father did for a living. And was I curious? Of course. What did you find?
Almost nothing, which I would have said was impossible in this day and age.
Well, he doesn't have a computer or even a cell phone, which lets out Facebook and any other social media. I had an idea that Mr. Bowditch would have sneered at Facebook, even if he did have a computer. Facebook was Snoopy.
You said there were initials on the toolbox you found, AB, right?
Right.
That fits. The property at the top of the hill comprises an acre and a half, which is a hell of a good patch. It was purchased by someone named Adrian Bowditch in 1920.
His grandfather?
Maybe, but given how old he is, it could have been his father.
Dad plucked his pipe off the porch rail, gave the bit a chew or two, then put it back.
How old is he, anyway? Does he really not know, I wonder?
I guess it's possible.
When I saw him back in the old days, this was before he more or less holed up, he looked about 50. I'd give him a wave, and sometimes he'd flip a hand back to me.
Never spoke to him?
Might have said hi, I guess, or passed a word about the weather if it was worth commenting on, but he wasn't the conversational type. Anyway, that would have made him roughly the right age for Vietnam, but I couldn't find any military record.
So he didn't serve?
Probably didn't serve. I probably could have found out more if I was still working for Overland, but I'm not, and I didn't want to ask Lindy.
I get it.
I established that he's got at least some money, because property taxes are a matter of public record, and the tab on number one Sycamore in 2012 was $22,000 and change.
He pays that every year?
It varies. The important part is he's paying it. And he was here when your mom and I moved in. Maybe I told you that? He would have been shelling out a lot less back in the day. Property taxes have gone up like everything else. But you're still talking six figures in all. It's a big lot. What did he do before he retired?
I don't know. I really just met the guy, and he was messed up when I did. We haven't had what you'd call a real heart-to-heart.
Although that was coming. I just didn't know it yet. I don't know either. I looked, but didn't find. Which, it bears repeating, I would have said was impossible in this day and age. I've heard of people going off the grid, but usually in the wilds of Alaska with a cult that thinks the world's going to end. Or in Montana like the Unabomber.
You know who?
A domestic terrorist, real name Ted Kaczynski. You didn't happen to see any bomb-making equipment lying around Bowditch's house, did you?
Dad said this with a humorous lift of his eyebrows, but I wasn't entirely sure he was joking.
The most dangerous thing I've seen was the scythe. Oh, and a rusty hatchet in the toolbox on the third floor. Any pictures? Like of his father and mother, or him when he was young?
Nope.
The only one I saw was a photo of Radar. It's on the table beside his easy chair in the living room.
Huh.
Dad reached for his pipe, changed his mind. We don't know where his money comes from, assuming he still has some, and we don't know what he did for a living. Something from home, I assume, because he's an agoraphobe.
That means, I know what it means.
My guess is he always tended in that direction, and it got worse as he got older. He pulled in.
The lady across the street told me he used to walk Radar at night.
She pricked up her ears at the sound of her name.
It seemed a little weird to me. Most people walk their dogs in the daytime, but...
Less people on the streets at night, Dad said.
Yeah, he sure doesn't seem like a high-end neighbor kind of guy.
One other thing, Dad said. Kind of weird, but he's kind of weird, wouldn't you say?
I passed on the question and asked about the other thing.
He's got a car. I don't know where it is, but he's got one. I found the registration online. It's a 1957 Studebaker. He gets a raid on the excise tax because it's registered as an antique. Like the property tax, he pays the cheaper, $60 or so.
If he's got a car, you should be able to find his driver's license, Dad. That will say how old he is.
He smiled and shook his head. Good try, but no Illinois license has ever been issued in the name of Howard Bowditch. And, of course, you don't have to have a driver's license to buy a car. It might not even run.
Why pay the yearly tax on a car that doesn't?
Here's a better one, Chip. Why pay the tax when you can't drive?
What about Adrian Bowditch, the father or grandfather? Maybe he had a license.
Didn't think of that. I'll check.
He paused.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I do.
Then ask him about some of this stuff. Because, as far as I can find, he's almost not there.
I said I would, and that seemed to close the discussion. I thought about mentioning the weird scuttering sound I'd heard in the shed. The shed with a heavy padlock on the door, even though there was supposedly nothing in it. But I didn't. That sound had grown vague in my mind, and I already had enough to think about.
3.
I was still thinking about those things as I took the plastic dust cover off the bed in the guest room where I'd sleep during part of spring vacation, or maybe even all of it. That bed was made up, but the sheets had a stale and musty smell. I took them off and put on fresh from the linen closet. How fresh, I didn't know, but they smelled better, and there was another set for the pull-out couch along with a comforter. I went downstairs. Radar was sitting at the foot waiting for me. I dropped the bedclothes on Mr. Bowditch's easy chair and saw that I'd have to move it and the little table beside it to pull the couch out. When I moved the table, the drawer came partway open. I saw a litter of change, a harmonica so old most of the chrome finish was worn away, and a bottle of carprofen. That made me happy, because I hadn't liked to think of Mr. Bowditch ignoring his aging dog's discomfort, and it certainly explained why the pet pantry lady had been so willing to sell me more. What made me less happy was realizing the medication wasn't working very well. I fed her, sticking a pill from the new bottle in her food, reasoning the stuff I'd just bought was fresher and maybe more powerful, then went back upstairs to get a pillow for the rollout. Radar was once more waiting at the foot of the stairs. Jesus, you gobbled that fast. Radar thumped her tail and moved just enough for me to get by her. I plumped the pillow a bit, then dropped it on what was now a bed in the middle of the living room. He might grouse about it, probably would, but I thought it'd be okay. Pin care for his fixator looked easy enough, but I hoped there was something in Home Care for Dummies about how to get him from the wheelchair, which I assumed he'd arrive in, to the bed and back again. What else? What else? Stick the old bedclothes from the guest room in the washer, but that could wait until tomorrow or even Monday. A phone, that was what else. He'd need one close at hand. His landline was a white cordless that looked like it belonged in a TCM cops and robbers movie from the 1970s, the kind where all the guys have sideburns and the chicks have puffed up hair. I checked to make sure it worked and got a dial tone. I was putting it back in its charging cradle when it rang in my hand. I yelped, startled, and dropped it. Radar barked. "It's okay, girl," I said, and picked it up. There was no button to accept the call. I was still looking for one when I heard Mr. Bowditch, tinny and distant.
"Hello? Are you there? Hello?"
So no accept button and no way to check who was calling. With a phone this old, you just had to take your chances. "Hello?" I said. "It's Charlie, Mr. Bowditch."
"Why is Radar barking?"
"Because I yelled and dropped the phone. I was holding it in my hand when it rang."
"Startled you, did it?"
He didn't wait for an answer.
"I hoped you'd be there because it's Radar's dinner time. You fed her, right?"
"Right. She ate it in about 3 gulps. He gave a hoarse laugh.
"That's her, all right. She's gotten a little shaky on her pins, but her appetite's as good as ever."
"How are you feeling?"
"My leg hurts like damn hell, even with the dope they're giving me, but they got me out of bed today. Dragging that fixator around makes me feel like Jacob Marley."
"These are the chains I wore in life."
He gave that hoarse laugh again. I was guessing he was pretty stoned.
"Read the book or seen the movie?"
"Movie. Every Christmas Eve on TCM. We watch a lot of TCM at our house."
"Don't know what that is."
He wouldn't, of course. No Turner Classic Movies on a TV equipped with nothing but, what had Mrs. Silvius called them? Rabbit ears?
"I'm glad I got you. They're going to let me come home on Monday afternoon. And I need to talk to you first. Can you come see me tomorrow? My roommate will be down in the lounge watching the baseball game, so we'll have some privacy."
"Sure. I made up the pull-out couch for you, also the bed upstairs for me, and..."
"Stop a minute, Charlie."
A long pause. Then,
"Is keeping secrets in your repertoire, as well as making beds and feeding my dog?"
I thought about my father's drinking years, his lost years. I'd needed to look after myself a lot of the time back then, and I'd been angry. Angry at my mother for dying the way she did, which was stupid because no way was it her fault. But you have to remember I was only 7 when she got killed on the goddamn bridge. I loved my father, but I was angry at him, too. Angry kids get in trouble, and I had a very able enabler in Birdie Bird. Birdie and I were okay when we were with Andy Chen, because Andy was kind of a Boy Scout, But when we were on our own, we got up to some fairly outrageous shit. It was stuff that could have gotten us in a lot of trouble if we'd been caught, some of it police-type trouble. But we never were, and my father never knew, never would, if I had my way. Did I really want to tell my dad that Birdie and I smeared dog shit on the windshield of our least favorite teacher's car? Just saying that here, where I promised to tell everything, makes me cringe with shame. And that wasn't the worst of it.
Charlie? Are you still there?
I'm here, and yeah, I can keep a secret. As long as you're not going to tell me you killed someone and the body's in that shed. It was his turn to be silent, but I didn't have to ask if he was still there. I could hear his raspy breathing.
Nothing like that. But these are big secrets. We'll talk tomorrow. You seem like a straight arrow. I hope to Christ I'm right about that. We'll see. Now, how much am I in the bucket for with you and your father?
Do you mean how much have we spent? Not that much. The groceries were the most. A couple of hundred and all, I guess. I saved the receipts.
There's also your time. If you mean to help me, you need to be paid. How does 500 a week sound?
I was flabbergasted. Mr. Bowditch, Howard, you don't have to pay me anything. I'm glad to...
The workman is worthy of his hire. Book of Luke. 500 a week, and if things work out, a year in bonus. All right?
Whatever he'd done in his working life, it hadn't been digging ditches. He was comfortable with what Donald Trump calls the art of the deal, which meant he was comfortable overriding objections. And my objections were pretty weak. I'd made a promise to God, but if Mr. Bowditch wanted to pay me while I fulfilled that promise, I didn't see any conflict. Plus, as my father was always reminding me, I had college to think about.
Charlie, do we have a deal?
If it works out, I guess we do. Although if he turned out to be a serial killer after all, I wasn't going to keep his secrets for $500 a week. For that, it would take at least $1,000. Joke. Thank you. I wasn't expecting anything.
I know that,
he interrupted. An ace interrupter was Mr. Howard Bowditch.
In some ways, you're quite a charming young man. A straight arrow, as I said.
I wondered if he'd still think so if he knew that one day while we were skipping school, the Birdman and I had found a cell phone in Highland Park and called in a bomb threat to Stevens Elementary. His idea, but I went along with it.
There's a flour canister in the kitchen. You may have seen it.
Not only had I seen it, he'd mentioned it to me, although he might have forgotten he'd been in a lot of pain at the time. There was money in it, he'd said, then said it was empty, said he forgot.
Sure. Take $700 out of it, $500 as your first week's wages, and $200 for expenses to date.
Are you sure?
Yes. And if you think it's bribe money, maybe sweetening you up for some outrageous request, it's not. Services rendered, Charlie, services rendered. About that, you can be perfectly straight with your father about anything we might discuss in the future. No. I'm aware it's a lot to ask.
As long as it's not a crime, I said, then amended it. Not a bad crime.
Can you come to the hospital around 3?
Yes.
Then I'll say good evening. Please give Radar a pat from the stupid old man who should have stayed off that ladder.
He hung up. I gave Radar several pats on the head and a couple of long strokes, nape to tail. She rolled over to have her belly rubbed. I was happy to oblige. Then I went into the kitchen and took the top off the flour canister. It was stuffed with money. There was a jumble of bills on top, mostly 10s and 20s, a few 5s and 1s. I pulled them out. They made a fair-sized heap on the counter. Below the loose bills were banded stacks of 50s and 100s. The bands were stamped First Citizens Bank in purple ink. I pulled them out, too, and it took some wiggling because they were really crammed in there. 6 banded stacks of 50s, 10 to each, 5-banded stacks of hundreds also 10 to a stack. Radar had come out into the kitchen and was sitting by her food dish, looking at me with her ears pricked.
Holy shit, girl, this is $8,000, and that's not counting the stuff on top.
I counted out $700 from the loose bills, neatened them, folded them over, and put the wad in my pocket where they made a bulge. It was at least 10 times the amount of money I'd ever had on my person. I picked up the banded bundles, started to put them back in the canister, then paused. There were 3 little pellets in the bottom, kind of reddish. I'd seen one of those before, in the medicine cabinet. I tipped them out and held them in the palm of my hand. I thought they were too heavy to be BBs, and if I was right in what I was thinking, it might go a long way toward explaining the source of Mr. Bowditch's income. I thought they were gold. 4. I hadn't ridden my bike, and the walk down the hill to our house only took 10 or 12 minutes, but that night I made it last. I had thinking to do and a decision to make. As I walked, I kept touching the bulge in my pocket, making sure it was still there. I'd tell Dad about Mr. Bowditch's call and his offer of employment. I'd show him the cash, $200 for what we'd spent and $500 for me. I'd tell him to put $400 of it in my college account, which just happened to be at First Citizens, and promise to put in another $400 every week that I was working for Mr. Bowditch, which might last right through the summer, or at least until football practice started in August. The question was whether or not I should tell him about how much money had been in the flour canister, and, of course, those gold BBs, if they were gold. By the time I let myself into our house, I'd made my decision. I'd keep the fact of the $8,000 in the canister to myself and the BBs that weren't BBs, at least until I'd had my talk with Mr. Bowditch the next day.
"Hey, Charlie," my father called from the living room. "Dog okay?"
"She's fine."
"Good to know. Grab yourself a Sprite and grab a chair. Rear Windows on TCM."
I grabbed a Sprite, came in, and muted the TV. "I've got something to tell you."
"What could be more important than James Stewart and Grace Kelly?"
"How about this?" I took the wad of money from my pocket and dropped it on the coffee table. I expected surprise, caution, and worry. What I got was interest and amusement. Dad thought Mr. Bowditch hiding money in one of his kitchen canisters fit right in with what he called the agoraphobe's hoarding mentality. I told him about the haul of old reading matter, not to mention the old TV and the elderly kitchen appliances.
"Was there more in there?"
"Some," I said, which wasn't a lie. Dad nodded.
"Did you check the other canisters? There might be a few hundred in with the sugar."
He was smiling.
"Nope."
He took the 200.
"A little more than we actually spent, but he'll probably need other stuff. Want me to deposit 400 of yours?"
"Sure."
"Good call. In one way, he's getting you cheap, at least for the first week. I think a full-time home helper would get more. On the other hand, you'll be earning while you learn, and you'll only be spending nights up there during your spring vacation."
He turned to look at me squarely.
"Are we clear on that?"
"Totally," I said.
"Okay, good. Bowditch rat-holing money makes me a little uneasy, only because we don't know where it came from, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I like that he trusts you, and I like that you're willing to take this on. You thought you'd be doing it for free, didn't you?"
"Yeah, I did."
"You're a good kid, Charlie. Not sure what I did to deserve you."
Considering what I was holding back, not just about Mr. Bowditch, but some of the shit I'd pulled with Birdie, that made me a little ashamed. Lying in bed that night, I imagined Mr. Bowditch having a gold mine in his locked shed, maybe with a bunch of dwarves to work it. Dwarves with names like Sleepy and Grumpy. That made me smile. I had an idea that whatever was in the shed might be the big secret he wanted to tell me about, but I was wrong. I didn't find out about the shed until later. Chapter 6. Hospital visit. The safe. Stantonville. Gold greed. Mr. Bowditch comes home. 1. Mr. Bowditch and I had quite the chat while his roommate was in the third floor lounge watching the White Sox play the Tigers with a heart monitor strapped to his chest.
"He's got some sort of ticker problem they can't quite fix," Mr. Bowditch said. "Thank Christ I don't have to worry about that. I've got enough problems."
He showed me how he could walk to the bathroom, leaning on those arm-sleeve crutches for all he was worth. It obviously hurt him, and when he came back from taking a leak, his forehead was wet with sweat. But I was encouraged. He might need the urinal with its long and somehow baleful neck for night calls, but it looked good for avoiding the bedpan. As long as he didn't fall in the middle of the night and break his leg all over again, that was. I could see the muscles in his scrawny arms trembling with every lunging step. He sat down on the bed with a sigh of relief.
"Can you help me with the..."
He gestured at the ironmongery encasing his leg. I lifted the leg with the fixator, and when it was stretched out, he sighed again and asked for a couple of pills from the Dixie cup on his night table. I gave them to him, poured some water from his pitcher, and down they went, his Adam's apple bobbing in his wrinkled neck like a monkey on a stick.
"They switched me from the morphine pump to this," he said. "Oxycontin. The doctor says I'll get hooked, if I'm not already, and I'll have to kick the habit. Right now, that seems like a fair trade. Just walking to the bathroom feels like a fucking marathon."
I could see that, and the bathroom at his house was further from the rollout. He might be needing the bedpan after all, at least to begin with. I went into the bathroom, wet down a washcloth, and wrung it out. When I bent over him, he pulled back.
"Here, here, what do you think you're doing?"
"Getting the sweat off you. Hold still." We never know when the turning points come in our relationships with others, and it was only later that I realized that was one for us. He held back a moment longer, then relaxed a little, and allowed me to wipe his brow and cheeks.
"Feel like a fucking baby."
"You're paying me. Let me earn my fucking money." That made him chuckle. A nurse peeked in the door and asked if he needed anything. He said he didn't, and when she was gone, he told me to close the door.
"This is where I ask you to stand up for me," he said. "At least until I can stand up for myself. And Radar, too. You ready to do that, Charlie?"
"I'll do my best."
"Yeah, maybe you will. It's all I can ask. I wouldn't put you in this position if I didn't have to. A woman named Ravensburger came to see me. Have you met her?"
I said I had.
"Hell of a name, isn't it? I try to think of a burger made out of raven meat, and my mind just boggles."
I won't say he was stoned on the oxy, but I won't say he wasn't. As gaunt as he was, 6 feet tall and surely no more than 150, those pink pills had to pack a wallop.
"She talked to me about what she called my payment options. I asked her what the damage was so far, and she gave me a printout. It's in the drawer there,"
he pointed.
"But don't bother about that just now." "I said, that's mighty high. And she said, good care is mighty expensive, Mr. Bowditch, and you have gotten the best. She said if I needed to consult a payment specialist, whatever that is when it's home and dry, she'd be happy to facilitate a meeting, either before I leave or after I'm home. I said, I didn't think that would be necessary. I told her I could pay in full, but only if I got a discount. Then we got down to the dickering. We finally settled on 20% off, which comes to about a $19,000 discount.
I whistled. Mr. Bowditch grinned.
"I tried to get her down to 25%, but she wouldn't budge off 20%. I think that's the industry standard. And hospitals are an industry, in case you wondered. Hospitals and prisons. Not much difference in how they run their businesses, except with prisons, it's the taxpayers who wind up footing the bill.
He wiped a hand across his eyes.
I could have paid the whole thing, but I enjoyed the dickering. Been a long time since I've had a chance to do any. Yard sales, in the old days. Bought a lot of books and old magazines. I like old things. Am I rambling? I am. Here's the point. I can pay, but I need you to make it possible.
If you're thinking about what's in the flower canister, he waved that away as if $8,000 were petty cash. In terms of what he owed the hospital, it was.
Here's what I want you to do.
He told me. When he was done, he asked me if I needed to write it down.
It's okay if you do, as long as you destroy your notes when the job's done.
Maybe just the safe combination. I'll write it on my arm, then wash it off.
You'll do it?
Yes. I couldn't imagine not doing it, if only to find out if what he was telling me was real.
Good. Repeat the steps back to me.
I did, then used his bedside pen to write a series of numbers and turns on my upper arm, where the sleeve of my t-shirt would cover it.
Thank you,
he said.
You'll have to wait until tomorrow to see Mr. Heinrich, but you can get ready tonight, when you feed radar.
I said okay, said goodbye, and left. I was, my dad's word, gobsmacked. Halfway down the elevator, I thought of something and came back.
Changed your mind already?
He was smiling, but his eyes looked worried. No, I just wanted to ask you about something you said.
What was it?
Something about presents? You said a brave man helps, but a coward gives presents.
I don't remember saying that.
Well, you did. What does it mean?
I don't know. It must have been the pills talking.
He was lying. I lived with a drunk for several years, and I knew a lie when I heard it. 2. I biked back to 1 Sycamore Street, and it wouldn't be an overstatement to say I was wild with curiosity. I unlocked the back door and accepted an exuberant greeting from Radar. She was able to get up on her back paws for strokes, which made me think that the newer pills might be packing a punch. I led her out in the backyard to do some business. I kept sending her mental messages to hurry up and pick a spot. When she was back in, I went upstairs to Mr. Bowditch's bedroom and opened his closet. He had a lot of clothes, mostly slop-around stuff like flannel shirts and khaki pants, but there were 2 suits. One was black, one was gray, and both of them looked like the kind of suits George Raft and Edward G. Robinson wore in movies like Each Dawn I Die, double-breasted and wide in the shoulders. I pushed aside the clothes and revealed a watchman safe, medium-sized, old-fashioned, about 3 feet high. I squatted, and as I reached for the combination dial, something cold nuzzled my back where my shirt had pulled out of my pants. I yelped and turned to see Radar, her tail wagging slowly back and forth. The cold thing had been her nose.
Don't do that, girl, I said.
She sat down, grinning as if to say she'd do what she wanted. I turned back to the safe. I got the combo wrong the first time, but on my second try, the door swung open. The first thing I saw was a gun resting on the safe's single shelf. It was bigger than the one my dad gave my mom for those times when he had to be away for a few days, or once for a week on a company retreat. That one was a .32, a lady's gun for sure, and I thought he might still have it, but wasn't entirely sure. There were times, when his drinking was at its worst, I'd gone looking for it, but I never found it. This one was bigger, probably a .45 revolver. Like most of Mr. Bowditch's stuff, it looked old school. I picked it up, gingerly, and found the catch that swung the cylinder. It was loaded, all 6 chambers.
I swung the cylinder back into place and returned it to the shelf. Considering what he'd told me, a gun made sense. A burglar alarm might have made even more, but he didn't want any police calls at number 1 Sycamore. Besides, in her earlier days, radar had been a perfectly good burglar alarm, Andy Chen being a case in point. On the floor of the safe was what Mr. Bowditch had told me I'd find. A big steel bucket with a knapsack laid over the top. I picked up the knapsack and saw the bucket was filled almost to the top with those BBs that weren't BBs, but solid gold pellets. The bucket had a double handle. I grabbed it and lifted. From my squatting position, I could barely manage it. There had to be 40 pounds of gold in there, maybe 50. I sat down and turned to look at radar. Jesus Christ, this is a fucking fortune. She thumped her tail. 3. That night, after I fed her, I went upstairs and looked at the bucket of gold again, just to make sure I hadn't imagined it. When I got home, Dad asked me if I was ready for Mr. Bowditch's homecoming. I said I was, but I had stuff to do before he arrived. Still okay to borrow your drill? And that power screwdriver?
Of course. And I'd still be glad to come up and give you a hand if I could, but I've got a meeting at 9. It's that apartment house fire I told you about. Turns out it may have been arson.
I'll be fine.
Hope so. Are you okay?
Sure. Why?
Oh, you seem a little off. Worried about tomorrow?
A little, I said, which wasn't a lie. You may wonder if I had any urge to tell my father about what I'd found. I didn't. Mr. Bowditch had sworn me to secrecy, that was one thing. He claimed the gold hadn't been stolen in the usual sense, and that was another. I'd asked what that meant, but all he would say is that nobody in the whole world was looking for it. Until I knew more, I was willing to take him at his word. There was another thing. I was 17 years old, and this was the most exciting thing that had ever happened to me, by far, and I wanted to chase it. 4. On Monday morning, I biked up to Mr. Bowditch's house bright and early to feed radar, and she did the heavy looking on while I installed the safety bars. The toilet was already a cozy fit in the tiny bathroom, and the safety bars would make a descent to the unloading position even cozier, but I thought that was good. I foresaw a certain amount of grumbling, but it would be hard for him to fall. He could even hold on to the bars while he urinated, which I thought was a plus. I tried wiggling them, and they stayed solid.
What do you think, Raids? Good to go?
Radar thumped her tail.
You can weigh the gold on my bathroom scale,
Mr. Bowditch told me during our conversation.
It won't be exact, but a kitchen scale takes forever. I know from experience. Use the knapsack to weigh and carry. Go a little on the heavy side. Heinrich will weigh it himself on a scale that's more accurate. Digital, you know.
He broke it into syllables like that, making it sound both silly and pretentious. How do you get it to him when you need a cash infusion? Stantonville was 7 miles away.
I take a Uber. Heinrich pays.
For a minute, I didn't understand, then I did.
What are you grinning about, Charlie?
Nothing. Do you do these exchanges at night? He nodded.
Usually around 10, when most of the people in the neighborhood are tucked in for the night, especially Mrs. Richland from across the street. That one's a nosy Parker.
So you said.
It bears repeating.
I had gotten the same impression.
I don't think mine's the only business Heinrich does at night, but he's agreed to close the shop tomorrow so you can come in the morning, between 9:30 and 10. I've never done an exchange of this size with him. I'm sure it'll be all right. He's never played anything but straight with me. But there's a gun in the safe, and if you want to take it for protection, that would be fine.
I had no intention of taking it. I know guns make some people feel powerful, but I'm not one of those guys. Just touching it made me feel creepy. If you had told me I would be carrying it not too far in the future, I would have called you crazy. I found a scoop in the pantry and went upstairs. I had washed the numbers off my arm after putting them in a password-protected note on my phone, but I didn't even need to consult it. The safe opened on my first try. I took the knapsack off the bucket and just marveled at all that gold. Unable to resist the impulse, I plunged my hands in up to the wrists and let the gold pellets run through my fingers. I did it again, and a third time. There was something hypnotic about it. I shook my head as if to clear it and started scooping gold. The first time I weighed the knapsack, the scale registered a little over 3 pounds. I added more and got it up to 5. The last time, the needle stopped at 7, and I decided that was good. If Mr. Heinrich's digital scale showed more than the agreed-upon 6 pounds, I could bring back the extra. I still had stuff to do at the house before Mr. Bowditch's arrival. I reminded myself to get a bell he could ring in the night if he needed something. Home Care for Dummies suggested an intercom or baby monitor, but I thought Mr. Bowditch might like something a little more old school. I had asked him how much 6 pounds of gold was worth, both wanting and not wanting to know the amount I'd be carrying on my back as I biked the 7 miles, mostly rural, to Stantonville. He told me that the last time he checked with the gold price group in Texas, it was going for about $15,000 a pound.
But he can have it for $14 a pound. That's the price we agreed on. It comes to $84,000, but he'll give you a check for $74,000. That will take care of my hospital bill, with a little left over for me and a nice profit for him.
Nice was putting it mildly. I don't know when Mr. Bowditch last checked with the gold price group, but as of the end of April in 2013, he was way low. I had checked the price of gold on my laptop before going to bed on Sunday night, and it was selling at better than $1,200 an ounce, which came to about $20,000 per pound. 6 pounds would have gone for around $115,000 on the gold exchange in Zurich, which meant this Heinrich dude would be $40,000 to the good. And gold wasn't like hot diamonds, where the buyer would insist on discounting because of the risk. The pellets were unmarked, anonymous, and could easily be melted down into little ingots or made into jewelry. I'd thought about calling Mr. Bowditch in the hospital to tell him he was selling cheap, but didn't. For a very simple reason, I thought he wouldn't care. I could sort of understand that. Even with 6 pounds taken from Cap'n Kid's bucket of gold, there was plenty left. My job, although Mr. Bowditch never said it, was just to do the deal and not get ripped off. It was a hell of a responsibility, and I was determined to live up to the trust he'd put in me. I buckled the straps on my knapsack, checked the floor between the closet safe and the bathroom scale for any gold pellets that had gotten away, and found none. I gave Radar a good stroking, for luck, and headed out carrying $115,000 in a beat-up old knapsack. My old friend Birdie Bird would have called it a lot of cheddar.
5.
Stantonville's downtown was a single street of cheesy shops, a couple of bars, and the kind of diner that serves breakfast all day, along with a bottomless cup of bad coffee. A number of the shops were closed and boarded up, with signs saying they were for sale or lease. My dad said that once Stantonville was a thriving little community, a great place to shop for people who didn't want to go into Elgin, Naperville, Joliet, or all the way to Chicago. Then, in the 1970s, the Stantonville Mall opened. Not just a mall, either, but A super mall with a 12-screen cineplex, a kiddie amusement park, a climbing wall, a trampoline area called Flyers, an escape room, and guys wandering around dressed as talking animals. That glitter dome of commerce was to the north of Stantonville. It sucked most of the life out of the downtown area, and what the mall missed got sucked out by the Walmart and Sam's Club to the south on the turnpike exit. Being on my bicycle, I avoided the pike and took Route 74A, a two-lane running past farms and cornfields. There were smells of manure and growing things. It was a pleasant spring morning and would have been a pleasant ride if I hadn't been aware of the small fortune I was carrying on my back. I remember thinking about Jack, the boy who'd climbed the beanstalk. I was on Stantonville's main drag by 9:15, which was a little early, so I stopped in the diner, got a Coke, and sipped it sitting on a park bench in a dirty little plaza featuring a dry fountain filled with trash and a bird-beshitted statue of someone I'd never heard of. I thought about that plaza and dry fountain later, in a place even more deserted than Stantonville. I can't swear that Christopher Pauly was there that morning. I can't swear he wasn't. Pauly was the kind of guy who could fade into the landscape until he was ready for you to see him. He could have been in the diner, chowing down on bacon and eggs. He could have been in the bus shelter, or pretending to study the guitars and boomboxes in the Stantonville Pawn and Loan. Or he could have been nowhere. All I can say is that I don't remember anyone in a retro White Sox hat, the kind with the red circle on the front. Maybe he wasn't wearing it, but I never saw that son of a bitch without it. At 9:40, I tossed my half-full Go cup into a nearby trash barrel and pedaled slowly down Main Street. The business section, such as it was, ran only 4 blocks. Near the end of the fourth, just a stone's throw from a sign reading, "Thanks for visiting beautiful Stantonville," was "Excellent Jewelers We Buy and Sell." It looked as shabby and dilapidated as the rest of this dying town's businesses. There was nothing in the dusty show window. The sign hanging in the door from a little plastic